Solana went down this week, David. I don't know if you noticed. I know you're on the Solana chain a lot.
All the time.
It was down for 5 hours, and that is the first time it's been down in almost a year. Bankless Nation is the second week of February. David, what time is it?
It's the Bankless Friday Weekly Roll-Up, where we cover all the weekly news in crypto, which is always an ambitious endeavor, yet we persevere nonetheless into the bullish frontier. How you doing, Ryan?
Good. I'm glad you said bullish frontier. Are you having fun, man? Is this fun yet?
I'm having fun. There's a lot of interesting things going on. There's a lot of exciting things going on. There's a lot to look forward to. A lot that's happening now. A lot that will happen in the future. Overall, I'm definitely. It's a good time in the market.
I feel like it's a good time in the market too. Like it's just hasn't gotten crazy yet. I don't know. We've seen some new things. Farcaster episode. Well, let's unpack it. What are we covering today?
We're covering first Solana's 5-hour network outage. Oof, we'll talk about that. There was a little bit of an autopsy, not the official one, but someone put a tweet thread together, so we'll go through that and talk about the significance. Second, the other very exciting thing that happened this week, the Eigenlayer LST tokens caps were lifted. How much TVL flooded into Eigenlayer?
It's just piling in. It's absolutely piling in. We also got the Farcaster users hitting all-time highs, so we'll talk a bit more about that. And David, we have the date for the next Ethereum upgrade. Is this the official date?
The devs. The date that the devs said.
I thought they didn't give dates.
Until they do.
Okay. Well, fair enough. Before we get in, we get a message from our friends and sponsors over at DYDX. What do they want the Bankless Nation to know?
There are 37 markets on DYDX, now DYDX chain. This is also a call to action for all DYDX token holders who still have the token on Ethereum that is no longer the home for your DYDX token. You should go and send that over to the DYDX chain where you can stake and be a validator of DYDX and get something like 15%+ paid in USDC from the DGENs that are trading on DYDX. Huh. So you can just maintain the DYDX chain, do your service to the network, and collect some USDC fees. There is a link in the show notes to learn more about how to do that, and also what all are the other $20 million opportunities of incentives going on in the DYDX ecosystem. A lot to pay attention to. Link in the show notes. Thank you, DYDX, for sponsoring this message.
Well, David, let's pay some attention to the market price, shall we? And sure. Honestly, David, at this time in the market, I don't know if I'm more zen than usual or what, but this is like right before this episode was the first time I actually looked at charts since last week, since the last roll-up. And I was pleasantly surprised to see this one. This is Bitcoin. Thanks to Kraken Pro for these excellent charts. And thanks to the Bitcoin gods for the charts showing upward trajectory. What are we at on the week?
I'm guessing, Ryan, you don't have the page on your phone that, like, if you scroll over it, like, shows all the prices.
No,
I'm guessing you don't have one of these things.
It's not healthy. It's not healthy for me to do that anymore.
You don't have the ETH price on your main home screen on your phone? You don't have that?
No, I don't do that. So is that, like,
you have no idea what the prices are until we do the weekly roll-up?
Yeah. I mean, really, unless something crazy happens and then I find about it some other way. And, like,
because somebody says something.
This is a nice price on the week, but this is not crazy activity.
It's not crazy.
So
I think people are excited about the price action right now, because we're coming back out of the 30,000 range where it was like the bearish range. Like people were thinking we're gonna get down to 36,000, and we're not. We're not doing that. We started the week at $42,500 on the Bitcoin, up to $45,200, up 6% on the week. Marching our way back to the Bitcoin ETF approval highs of 49,000. And I think, Ryan, once we like hit 49,000 and break 50,000, like, I'm sorry, like all-time highs are next.
That would be all-time highs of this cycle, right? This bull cycle for about 49K?
Yeah. 49 is the new high water mark. Yeah, so but like, we set that like 2 or 3 weeks ago.
All right, so 50K would be like kind of net new territory for this cycle. And what is all-time high for Bitcoin now?
69.
How really?
How could you forget? Yeah.
What's silly me. All right, 69. Next, you're going to tell me Ethereum all-time high was 4,200.
No, it was 4,900.
sorry. That's higher. That's actually higher than I remembered. Okay, well, tell me about ETH on the week. Where are we at?
$2,290 is where it started. We are up 6% to $2,430. So some up weeks.
So
up
both weeks week. Bitcoin and ETH are up 6% on the week.
That's correct.
You know, we'll take
that
one. Not double digits, but we'll take it. And the ratio, is that about steady?
Well, it's steady, but it's low. but it's steady.
Lower than you want.
Lower than I want.
It's a long time.
Plenty of room for upside. I'll reframe it like that.
Lots of room in the ratio for upside. Tell me about the total crypto market cap.
We just broke this morning $1.8 trillion.
Is that all-time highs?
Yeah, we have not. Well, not all-time highs for the total crypto market cap. I think we got a little bit above that.
No, but I mean it's cycle. Cycle all-time highs, right?
Oh, that's what I mean. I mean, I think we hit 1.86 right at the Bitcoin ETF approval, and it's been down since then. So we are $60 billion off of cycle total crypto market cap all-time highs.
Wow.
I want two trillion. Two trillion.
And then what happens at two? You just feel better?
You get to three.
It's never enough for you, is it?
No.
Let's talk about something that's never enough, which is total locked value in layer twos and transactions on layer twos. It can never be enough for me, David. This layer two update is brought to you by Mantle, which is a new and upcoming layer two that we especially enjoy. By the way, I think METH is at all-time highs. Speaking of all-time highs, which is Mantle staked ETH.
Yeah, TVL on Mantle, all-time highs. Also, METH also now in Eigenlayer. So there's a bunch of Mantle Ether in Eigenlayer. And what they're going to do, they're juicing the Mantle ETH yields like natively. So like the Mantle ETH yield is like 7%. And all of the Mantle METH treasury that's now in Eigenlayer, they're just going to send the points over to the METH holders on the Mantle layer 2.
Oh, that's cool. You get some yield on your yield, huh?
Yeah,
that's what I like.
Some points on your yield on your yield.
Some points on my yield on my yield. Wow.
Yeah.
This is crypto in 2024, folks. Well, we're close to all-time highs in total value locked in layer twos at $22 billion and activity. Yeah, not too bad. We're about five Ethereum's worth of activity.
Five and a half. Twos. Yeah. I want that number to be higher. I'm dissatisfied by that number.
Yeah.
I want eight. Show me eight.
Yeah. How about you think post the next Ethereum hard fork, EIP-4844, you think that unleashes the beast here?
That's a good point. Yeah, I don't know. What do you think that jumps to?
I don't know. I mean, transactions get cheaper. It doesn't mean that...
Yeah, first transactions get cheaper and then there is more of them in that order of operations.
I mean, transactions get cheaper and that induces demand. That would be the theory. And so, we get more activity. Although I don't actually know if cost of transactions on layer twos... how much of a constraint that is. It's got to be somewhat of a constraint, right? Because... Somewhat.
Well, yeah. If you lower costs, you have more arbitrage opportunities.
Well, how much does it cost? How much does a transaction like moving ETH on Arbitrum?
Optimism? I think it's like 4 or 5 cents.
Four or five cents right now.
And then to swap on Uniswap, it's like 11 to 12 cents.
So we're going to fractions of a penny, right? Point.
Momentarily, yeah. And then it will come back up to about those prices, but then there will be like a 20 to 30 to 40% more transactions.
So I guess if transactions are like, 5 cents, 10 cents, mm-hmm. 25 cents, 30 cents, that is a constraint, I think, on activity. That's
sure.
That's enough where you kind of like pause and like, do you actually need to do this or not? So it's enough.
Yeah. It's enough to like... a lot of automated transactions don't happen. I think users don't think about 30 cents unless they're doing a ton of stuff. But, how many times do you touch your ledger every single day?
Not very often.
Not that often.
I do think bots are big activity big drivers here, right? A lot of robots using our chains here. Right. Well, let's get to some general market news. And there is some, downside, I guess, right now in the markets. This is a tweet from
Don't get
Matt
too
Hogan.
Excited.
Here we go again, he says. 1.4 billion of GBTC from the Genesis bankruptcy. Ah, I forgot about that. We still got to clean that up, David.
Still got that.
Potentially followed by another 1.2 billion in the future, again from Genesis. He says, this is a lot for the market to digest in a short period of time. So, okay, we still have Genesis, I guess, to go through their liquidation process. And that's going to be some Bitcoin outflow. Do you think that'll be downward pressure on price?
It will cease upward pressure on price. It will delay upward pressure on price, in my opinion. Yeah. Which I think, I know we want upward movements because that's what, of course, obviously. But also the longer that we can go before all-time highs, in my mind, the better, the healthier, the less degen, the more responsible, the longer we can grow out the infrastructure.
Listen to like, you.
If we can just stretch out the anticipatory period as long as possible.
Wow.
You know? And just like,
I don't know where we're going with this.
Stay but... edging, you know? We just gotta edge our way there.
The better slow and steady. Slow and steady wins the race is what my co-host is trying to say.
Yes.
You know what? I don't know if I would have heard this from the David Hoffman of 2019 and 2020. I don't know if I would have heard David Hoffman urging caution and slowness. I think you would just be like, bring it on, man. Like, Brit,
yeah,
I want
like,
my 10X.
I want my portfolio to go up just like the next guy, but I know it's good for me. Like, I want it to go up slowly and surely and long over time because I want the good times to stick around, not
right.
just like have a blow off top, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Enjoy your beer, you know?
I don't want to have a premature bull market. No one enjoys those.
All right.
It's a bad time for everyone.
Well, moving on, David, let's talk about the Bitcoin spot ETF, this horse race of horse races where all of the bankers have. Jumped into Bitcoin with their ETF products. Which is winning? Who are the winning horses at this stage, David?
Well, GBTC is still in the lead in terms of like AUM. It's got 71% of the market, but that number is going, that some number is getting smaller, and then all the other numbers are getting bigger. So IBIT from BlackRock at 11.5%. FBTC from Fidelity at 10%, ARK at 2.6%, and then Bitwise at 2.5%. But like the if you're watching on screen, the big blue shape is going to get eaten by the smaller rainbows. These are technical terms.
The big blue, so it's opposite of Pac-Man then.
It's, yeah, Pac-Man's getting smaller, rainbow's getting bigger. The rest of the pie chart, we're looking at a pie chart. which also is like kind of intimidating because that GBTC definitely needs to like flow out, but that doesn't mean sold. The people that are dumping GBTC are eager to dump. And then the GBTC that's left in the Grayscale, now ETF, they're just getting charged really high fees. And so if they want to hold, they will hold. They just need to transfer.
I mean, some of these, like with BlackRock, they were subsidizing it, right? It was like free. Some of these ETFs
a lot of these
are, like,
free, are
free
for
the
first
6 months.
Yeah.
Whereas GBTC is still
1.5%, which is insane for an ETF.
Yeah. And you can really see these flows in terms of volume where actually BlackRock's ETF is leading as 40% of the volume. I guess that's on the week, huh? Versus GBTC with 30%. So really
by the time listeners get this, there will be $30 billion of AUM inside of the Bitcoin ETFs. It's 29.2 right now.
Well, you got a personal favorite ETF, David? Do you have any
Oh, of course.
Bets on horses? Really?
Yeah, do you have a guess which one of my favorite is?
Yeah, I'm gonna say Matt Hogan's.
Absolutely. You gotta give it to Bitwise. Of course.
Have you ever had a favorite?
They were
ETF?
Here first. All of the BlackRocks, you know, Fidelity gets some kudos.
Yeah.
BlackRocks, you guys are just a bunch of boomers, but hey, we love you too.
Yeah.
You guys have all the boomer wealth. Thanks for being here.
You're very wealthy.
But you gotta give it to Bitwise. They're like the good guys.
What about Van Eck with HODL? That's
oh,
cool
they
name.
They also deserve a shout out for sure. Super crypto natives, but no, Bitwise. Bitwise wins.
Okay, I agree with you.
I think
I
they also
disagree.
Have the lowest fees. The lowest fees.
Yeah, this is James Seifert. Big volume day for BlackRock's ETF. Total volume over $1 billion for the group. So when ETH ETF, huh?
When
ETH
ETF. We got some things to talk about with the ETH ETF.
Another number that is up in the markets we should talk about, a record day for Farcaster, David. It's 10X.
I think it's been a record day every single day.
Yeah. This was from February the 5th. So that was Monday. Is that the same day? Oh, almost the same day our podcast with Dan Romero dropped. I guess we probably hit new records on that podcast, David. That was a fantastic episode. I really enjoyed that with Dan, but it's great to see the traction. I've been spending, as I mentioned, this far.
Wait, just for context.
Yeah.
Last week we showed this graphic of Dan talking about daily active users over Farcaster, and it was hitting 10,000, then 11,000, then 15,000. And Dan was tweeting it out, new record for daily active users on Farcaster. It was 61,000 this week. It's four times higher.
Does that still sound small, though, in the scheme of Web 2? 61,000 users? That's like...
I don't care about Web 2. I care about crypto. In crypto terms, it's massive.
It's really great. It's really great. And this is, by the way, not a token-incented app. Although, is it?
There are bots, there are fake accounts on there. Like, you can just tell, like, that's a fake account. Because I think people are now trying to increase their footprint, but it's still a big hurdle to get over to spin up a Farcaster account. Like, you have to make
there's way more fake bot activity, all that stuff on Twitter.
Yeah.
For sure. Oh, I've been enjoying the Farcaster community.
It's been great.
The conversations there are just fantastic. A lot of bankless listeners as well.
I've been tweeting out my morning latte arts on Farcaster in the morning.
No, you've been casting out, David. I've been tweeting them.
Well, Dan said it's okay to say tweet. That's what he said.
So,
like, you still Google on Bing.
Wait. So you've been doing what? I'm gonna look up. Sorry, I haven't been following.
I've been
time
trying
your
my
latte
hand
art.
At, like, latte art. Yeah, this latest day was the worst day. Day four, but I finally figured out.
It's a mountain, or is it a poo emoji?
People said it looked like a fetus, which I think is correct.
What was that? What you going for? Explain the art.
That was yesterday. Yeah, latte art day four was especially bad.
Oh,
latte
a circle art, blobby thing.
Circle blobby thing had a shape to it.
All right,
yeah.
Wait, you are missing opportunities here, because, like, you should be NFTing this collection, and you should be shilling it to your followers. And then
look at
just...
that. Look at day two. Day two is the best one.
Effed up Christmas tree. Yeah. That's actually good. I might buy that. Yeah. One tokenization. It's got your foot in the bottom too.
Somebody commented, like, I can't believe you're showing off latte art on Farcaster after you talk shit about all these beverages that people are drinking.
This is the kind of content I think people don't get on Twitter though from you.
That's right. Yeah. That's
so
true.
Wow,
that's
it's
true.
Exclusive
gotta go
content.
On Farcaster for that.
By the way, Farcaster's bringing a lot of activity to base, it looks like.
Yeah. Uh huh.
Mm-hmm. So this is in the poster. This is a cast, David, not a tweet. Wow, crazy chart displaying base dominance in the last few weeks for total transactions by chain. Farcaster users are now conducting 2 out of every 3 transactions using base. So what's good for Farcaster is also good for our layer twos, David, transaction activity.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. I kind of would think that it would be a competition between base and Zora on Farcaster to be the big destination to do your NFT minting, like, kind of consumer crypto stuff.
It seems to be gravitating. Those two communities are really adopting Farcaster a lot. David, what do we have coming up in the episode?
Coming up next, we're going to talk about the Solana outage, the 5-hour outage. What happened? Why did it happen? All that kind of stuff. What does it mean? How did the markets react? Then we're going to talk about Eigenlayer and it reopening the gates for liquid stake tokens, how much ETH flooded in. And the blobs are coming to the last testnet, which, spoiler, testnet did just fine, which means that we have the date for Denkun. We'll talk about that and more. But first, I want to talk about some of these fantastic sponsors that make this show possible, especially Kraken, a preferred crypto exchange in 2024. If you do not have an account with Kraken, how the hell are you getting dollars into crypto? Use Kraken. There's a link in the show notes. Kraken knows crypto. Kraken's been in the crypto game for over a decade, and as one of the largest and most trusted exchanges in the industry, Kraken is on the journey with all of us to see what crypto can be. Human history is a story of progress. It's part of us, hardwired. We're designed to seek change everywhere, to improve, to strive. And if anything can be improved, why not finance? Crypto is a financial system designed with the modern world in mind. Instant, permissionless, and 24/7. It's not perfect, and nothing ever will be perfect. But crypto is a world-changing technology at a time when the world needs it the most. That's the Kraken mission, to accelerate the global adoption of cryptocurrency so that you and the rest of the world can achieve financial freedom and inclusion. Head on over to kraken.com/bankless to see what crypto can be. Not investment advice. Crypto trading involves risk of loss. Cryptocurrency services are provided to U.S. and U.S. territory customers by Payward Ventures Inc. PVI, doing business as Kraken. It's everyone's favorite season in crypto, tax season. And crypto tax is always an absolute headache, especially for all you degens out there. But it doesn't have to be a nightmare. That's where Crypto Tax Calculator comes in, the software built for degens by degens. As Coinbase's official global tax partner, Crypto Tax Calculator focuses on making complex transactions into easy ones, supporting over 300,000 currencies across Ethereum, Arbitrum, Optimism, as well as 1,000 other integrations as well. It's as simple as connecting your wallet, pulling in all your transactions, and following the automated suggestions to quickly and accurately calculate your tax obligations. Plus, for all the airdrop farmers out there, Crypto Tax Calculator has your back, as they are consistently adding support for new and upcoming layer ones, layer twos, and all the airdrops that you're currently farming. 2024 is the year when the degens do their crypto taxes with speed and confidence. Make taxes this year easy and affordable with Crypto Tax Calculator. Sign up at CryptoTaxCalculator.io and get a 30% discount with code BANK30. Click the link in the show notes for more information. Are you launching a token? Is it already live? How are you managing the legal and tax obligations for providing token grants to your team. It's no secret that token management gets complicated. Between learning all the legal language and tax obligations in every country that your team is in, token grant management can feel like an obstacle course, but it doesn't have to. That's where Toku steps in. Toku provides practical tools to handle token grants, allowing for effective oversight of token distributions and payroll tax compliance for employees, contractors, advisors, and investors. They also handle tax withholdings through their real-time tax calculations that can be done by Toku or integrated into any payroll EOR providers in any jurisdiction. Toku is a trusted provider of Protocol Labs, DYDX Foundation, Mina Protocol, and many more. Get started for free and make token compensation simple at toku.com/bankless.
Solana went down this week, David. I don't know if you noticed. I know you're on the Solana chain a lot.
All the
time. It was down for 5 hours, and that is the first time it's been down in almost a year. Almost made it to a year without incident, but it fell over. Tell me a little bit about that.
So we don't have the complete postmortem yet, but there was a tweet from Matthew Siegel, who kind of gave his autopsy. I'm sure the formal audit, the formal like situation report will say something similar to this. He says the BPF loader, the Berkeley packet filter, which is the mechanism to deploy, upgrade, and execute programs on Solana, which we would call smart contracts on Ethereum, failed. This seemed to relate to a previous SMID Solana improvement proposal that altered some of the features, including adding a blocker to stop metadata from being used in the BPF because it was no longer needed. Some technical stuff. Basically, I would say the culprit of this is that Solana changes a lot. And as it's changing a lot, that can always introduce new bugs to any software. That's just the nature of software. And recent upgrade to one of the things that makes Solana run implemented a bug, and that caused downtime. And so this is what happens when you have a single client system and you have a lot of updates going into that single client system.
What do you mean by single client system?
Single client system. There is one version of the software that runs, and if that version of the software has a bug, then the whole system has a bug. And this is in contrast to a multi-client software, multi-client system like Ethereum, which has five different clients, where if one of those clients has a bug, the other clients don't care, and then they keep on going. Unless, of course, that client is a majority bug, like majority client like Geth, and it has 80-something percent dominance, down to like 75, I think, right now. Anyway, over 66% is a problem. And if Geth had a bug, then that would be the bug of Ethereum because of the dominance. But if a minority client had a bug, then the other clients are just totally fine. Solana has one client. It's the Solana Core client. They're working on their second Fire Dancer, which is the, like, it's basically the proof of stake equivalent and significance of Solana. Like, they're going to become super fast, super cheap. It's going to be the second client of Solana. But then there's also nuance there because they want the Fire Dancer client to actually just replace the current client. And then
the other one will
client.
Be a lot slower, right? Compared to Fire Dancer.
Yeah, by comparison. Yeah. Anyways, Solana went down for 5 hours. They made a patch to the client, and then that client was released just an hour later after it went down. But then it took a number of hours for all the validators to. There's like this kind of like process to restarting Solana. Like all the client validators need to like sync up with each other. I don't know. So it was down for 5 hours.
Yeah. So the last time it was down prior to this was February 25th, 2023.
Almost a year.
And then before that, 2022 was pretty spotty with, I don't know,
there was like six or seven
outages. You can, you know, kind of see them. And when we say down, it means like no transaction activity, like completely down. It just like fell over completely. Mm-hmm. And so what is the process for restarting Solana, David? Like what does that look like when Solana goes down?
There's a link in the show notes to check out Matthew Siegel's tweets. He can kind of explain the details of it at a technical capacity. I want to skip to the very last tweet in the tweet thread. And he talks about the second order effects of what happens when a chain goes down. He goes, once restarted, there will be a flurry of DeFi activity as arbitrage bots, seek to take advantage of all the arbitrages that have materialized. Because when Solana goes down, the world goes on, markets continue, and Solana is, as a state machine, is not updating to the state of the world. And so he said that some estimates there might be as high as $25 million in MEV. Really hard to measure this in like real time. But as soon as the Solana blockchain gets started again, like there are stale prices that need to get updated. There's people that needs to be liquidated. Like there's a bunch of stuff that happens. And this is one of the concerns of having a system that has poor liveness, is that when it restarts again, whenever it goes down and it restarts again, there's just this massive fight for all of that arbitrage. And this generally not a desirable property of a system.
Yeah, it's also generally not a desirable property, of course, for a blockchain to go down in the first place, particularly when it's kind of like a layer one blockchain. Ethereum had an event, not quite like this because of its multi-client architecture, but was it with the Prism client? My God, that was like...
It was with the Prism client. Yeah, you're talking about the non-finality event?
Yes. Right. How would that have compared to something like this from your recollection?
Right. Okay. So the non-finality event was that blocks were being propagated around Ethereum. The blockchain was operating as normally from a user perspective. All transactions were going through, but they just weren't they weren't being finalized because less than 66% of the chain was finalizing. And finalizing is just like economic security. So it's like the first line of defense in the Ethereum system, before an actual outage. So one client of Ethereum went down, and that brought down more than a third of the network. And so because of Ethereum's multi-client design, because Ethereum is larger than any one client, the rest of the clients are fine. It's just not finalizing, as in there is risk of reorgs if further catastrophe happened. So it's kind of like you get to take two bullets rather than one. So in that time of Ethereum where there was like a non-finality event that I think lasted like half a day, maybe less, Ethereum took like a bullet, but it had body armor. But like then for a moment, that body armor was gone. And so if it took another bullet, then we would have like a real big issue.
Yeah, a castle with multiple walls, and the first wall was kind of breached, right?
Exactly, right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it was really interesting. So first of all, something that didn't happen was the price of SOL didn't tank. So the market kind of like shrugged this off.
Yeah, it went down like 2 or 3%, which I would consider not reacting.
And I didn't see much of this conversation on crypto Twitter because I just wasn't going out and looking for it. I'm sure there was some grave dancing by some. I'm sure there was others who, you know, from like maybe the Solana tribe.
I think everyone kept it pretty tame, I would
really?
Say. Really? I think like overall it was a tame thing.
Okay. Well, yeah. So
there was definitely some grave dancers, but like, you know, how can it not be?
Yeah. Well, this is not grave dancing.
Wasn't me.
You should preface this. This is just a simple prediction. I recall, David, that one of your January 4th, 2024 predictions of this year, number 5 was Solana goes down. So I just wanted to say congrats on that.
Thank you.
I mean, your prediction, you called it. And Solana's look, move fast and break things. And so they're moving fast and things are breaking. And this is David Mihal saying, honestly, I thought this prediction was unrealistic. Enjoy your W, David. So there you go.
Thanks, David. Solana, there's always next year. Moving on, EigenLayer Caps open up hits $5 billion in total locked value. It was opened this Monday until February 9th, which is today at the time of listening, if you're listening to this on Friday. All pools are fully uncapped. So it's like a time opened gate. There's no caps except for the time. And so
No caps for how long?
Until Friday at 12 p.m. Pacific time. So no caps until
Friday
then.
The 9th.
Tomorrow. Yes. Tomorrow for
today,
us.
By the
today
time
for listeners. Today for listeners. 12 p.m. Pacific time. Not much time. So infinite amounts of ETH can go in until, you know, the limit of ETH. But then once that time is, then the doors shut.
Infinite amount of ETH until there's no more ETH.
Until there's no more ETH, yeah.
You're capped by the supply.
Capped by the supply, yeah. We just crossed $5 billion in TVL in EigenLayer, $5.3 billion. It was $5 billion when I looked at this. Now it's at $5.3. EigenLayer is just hoovering up the ETH, bro. Absolutely nuts.
Yeah, it's munching it. It is eating all the ETH that it can. Look at these like big, I wonder how high it could get because this must be still climbing, right?
Until it's climbing right now
until 12 p.m. PST on February 9th. Mm-hmm. And then what happens after that? Another pause?
I'm guessing that this is probably maybe there's more. This could be one of the last openings of the gate until EigenLayer mainnet. I'm just speculating here. But there's just like a lot of ETH in there. How much more ETH do they want? Everyone wants EigenLayer points, which is why this is happening. Everyone else should just totally unstake their ETH and get out. Because I've got it and I'll take it from here. I'll just take the points.
I will
restake. It'll be fine. Everyone,
I don't
go
know
away.
Why you're so. They're just points, David. It's not like there's any value attached to it. It's not like it's
not
a token. It's just a point.
I volunteer to collect the points.
What's going to be interesting to find out is once the limiters are off, the governors are completely off. Like, what will the market. What's the ceiling for the market in terms of total deposits in EigenLayer? And we haven't quite seen that yet. So we'll have to see. And of course, all of this is a lot of speculation on this whole AVS market, these Eigen applications that really are starting to get built, but nothing has come out that, you know, will do something functionally fantastic. I mean, we're all betting on the future utility of the EigenLayer ecosystem. What's your take on that? You think that's a good bet? Do you think there's real stuff being developed right now?
Yeah, it's a speculative bet. The people intending to build good stuff are numerous. The teams building AVSs are numerous. The excitement, the nerd sniping that is being done by EigenLayer in both TradFi and in like Silicon Valley Web 2 software as a service tech circles, EigenLayer is opening up doors to these people that were not previously nerd sniped by Bitcoin, Ethereum, Solana, all these different like waves of adoption that, like, you know, Solana, to its credit, nerd sniped people that did not get nerd sniped by Ethereum. Ethereum, nerd sniped people that did not get nerd sniped by Bitcoin. EigenLayer is doing the same thing. It's nerd sniping people on Wall Street. It's nerd sniping people in San Francisco. It's building, and because it's building out unique use cases that can like very elegantly and simply hook into, you know, Web2 and TradFi without having to be all like chainy and crypto-y. And so I think it's a new way to export crypto economics to the outside world. So that's all of that is real. Right now, everyone is speculating on EigenLayer points, on the EigenLayer airdrop. So my concern, actually, Ryan, is like when EigenLayer mainnet ships sometime Q2 is when, as Sriram said, when I did my Q&A with him, why will all of the Ether stay put? Because a lot of these AVSs still need to be built out, right? Like the incentive are the points, I'm assuming. Some will stay because they want to stay committed to EigenLayer.
So you think there's a potential as once we launch, some of this capital then floods back out of EigenLayer?
Yes. I think that's a rational thing to assume, that some people are just here for the points.
The speculative mania.
Could
right
you
now?
Imagine just being here for the points?
I can't even imagine.
Could not imagine.
Kind of a sick person. You know,
takes their points and leaves.
Okay, so this is the restaking wars as well, the LRT wars. And give us an update. This is kind of like the Bitcoin ETFs we're talking about. And there's a number of horses in the race, and some are winning versus others, but it kind of changes on a week-to-week basis. What are we looking at here?
This is a cool little graphic showing all of the liquid restaking protocols, the people that are aggregating AVS yields, putting them into a token, just like LSTs. And we are just watching them collect their ETH, they collect the TVL over time. And you see like EtherFi far in the lead at the very, very top, followed by KelpDAO, Renzo, then EigenPi, and then Puffer out of nowhere on the second, just like rocketing up in TVL to jump into second place. So EtherFi breaking 700 million this week, Puffer breaking 300 million this week, KelpDAO coming in third, followed by Renzo. This graphic, the GIF is 5 days old, so now what Ryan's showing on the screen is now up super up to date. 850 million for EtherFi coming in at number one. Oh my God, Puffer at $770 million. Wow, amazing. Apparently Justin Sun just put a bunch of Ether into Puffer. Puffer has taken only staked ETH from Lido. So all of the TVL and Puffer is Lido staked ETH, and it is their intention, as soon as their validator's mainnet launches, they will swap out the liquid staked ETH from Lido into Puff ETH, which is the point. And so all of the Ether inside of Lido gets taken out of Lido and put into Puffer as a vampire attack, which is taking 1/30th of all Lido Ether away from Lido. So like really like carving into Lido dominance.
Huh. Well, that's a good thing, right? I mean, it's a good thing for the network. So LRTs are all of these are new names, like new projects
new
in the fold.
Yeah.
So this isn't some of the dominant liquid staking tokens that are kind of like taking the lead here. So that's good.
New names, new Lindy clocks, the risks reset, everything is new again.
Oh, so, here's Van Spencer saying what we just said, except in a more pithy form. He says, EigenLayer TVL is up to $5 billion. From 2.15 billion just 2 days ago, all the L2s and restaking and staking apps are just black holes for Ether.
It was an Ether's money tweet. Surprise.
He's taking our place, David.
And thanks to all of this activity, we have a new high in the share of all Ether that is staked, and that is 25%. 25% of all Ether is staked. I think in the previous era, the EF people all kind of thought that between 20 and 30% of all ETH would become staked and that would be equilibrium. But that was really before the complete total acceptance of LSTs as an equilibrium. And that was before Eigenlayer. I think we're going to blow past that 30% number pretty damn quickly here. And we're gonna start to approach like one third, one half. But right now, 25%.
David, there was another announcement this week that I noticed that Binance was delisting Monero from its exchange. So tell us about that.
Yeah, I think for the newcomers, the people who came in 2021 and beyond, this won't be like perceived a very big deal. But I'll say this marks the end of an era. Binance delisting Monero, delisting the last privacy chain. Privacy chains used to be a huge sector in 2017 when you and I got into crypto.
There was Monero, like, there was
Dash, Zcash.
Yeah.
There was a bunch of others. Remember Mimblewimble?
Oh, yeah. Okay, I mean, the pitch was basically Bitcoin's perfect. The only thing it's missing is privacy. And so we need privacy-specific chains that deliver privacy at the base protocol layer, and that these would all kind of like take off and finally deliver that missing functionality. Never came to fruition, did it?
No. And I would say Monero won the privacy chain wars, all the chains that were meant for privacy. Monero won. Best privacy, best community, managed to be the best store of value, even though it was a poor store of value for the privacy chains. But now the king of privacy chains is being delisted from Binance. And I'm sorry, doesn't matter what properties you have. If you don't have liquidity, you can't compete. And if you're delisted from, you're not being listed by Coinbase. You're not being listed by Kraken. That's not happening. So I'm kind of declaring Monero to be formally like dead as a money store of value, which is the end of an era. That is the end of a big era.
I think it still can be used in very small niche use cases, but it's just going to be absolutely tiny because...
Yeah, not for like regular use cases, like the bad ones.
Well, yeah, my take on this was this is why privacy chains don't work, is because they're not programmable. They don't have the other verbs. Like you can just send Monero, but you can't exchange Monero from one asset to another without what? Going to Binance, going to a central, going to a bank. And what are the banks going to do? Well, they're going to be requested by, commanded by, pushed into by the state, not listing any of these privacy coins because nation states do not necessarily want to encourage on-chain privacy, right?
Certainly
that's
not.
That's exactly what is happening here. I think you had a take on this as well.
Yeah, I just think this isn't a coincidence that this is happening right after the, not right after, but just like not that long after the Binance Department of Justice settlement. The Department of Justice doesn't want privacy. So just a big old reminder, we're probably going to win the right to have DeFi. We're probably going to win the right to have our private keys. We're probably going to win everything that we want except for privacy. Privacy is still on the table, something that we still need to fight for if we want the maximally a successful version of crypto, and that's going to be a hard fight.
I do think Ethereum is on the frontier of that fight as well. I mean, if it's not there, I don't know where else it is. So we'll see how that evolves. David, what do we have coming up next?
A registered token securities exchange wants to list ETH as a security. Christ, we're talking about this again. And blobs are live on the last testnet, ready for mainnet. When is Dankun? I'll tease it for the third time this show. We're about to find out. We're going to tell you right after this. But first, a moment to talk about some of these fantastic sponsors that make this show possible, especially Mantle, the layer 2 with extra high yields that are now giving you eigenpoints if you use the layer 2. Check it out. There's a link in the show notes. Mantle, formerly known as BitDAO, is the first DAO-led Web3 ecosystem, all built on top of Mantle's first core product, the Mantle Network, a brand new high-performance Ethereum Layer 2 built using the OP stack, but uses Eigenlayer's data availability solution instead of the expensive Ethereum Layer 1. Not only does this reduce Mantle Network's gas fees by 80%, but it also reduces gas fee volatility, providing a more stable foundation for Mantle's applications. The Mantle Treasury is one of the biggest DAO-owned treasuries, which is seeding an ecosystem of projects from all around the Web3 space for Mantle. Mantle already has sub-communities from around Web3 onboarded, like Game7 for Web3 gaming, and Bybit for TVL and liquidity and on-ramps. So if you want to build on the Mantle network, Mantle is offering a grants program that provides milestone-based funding to promising projects that help expand, secure, and decentralize Mantle. If you want to get started working with the first DAO-led Layer 2 ecosystem, check out Mantle at mantle.xyz and follow them on Twitter at 0xmantle. You know Uniswap. It's the world's largest decentralized exchange with over $1.4 trillion in trading volume. You know this because we talk about it endlessly on Bankless. It's Uniswap, but Uniswap is becoming so much more. Uniswap Labs just released the Uniswap mobile wallet for iOS, the newest, easiest way to trade tokens on the go. With a Uniswap wallet, you can easily create or import a new wallet, buy crypto on any available exchange with your debit card with extremely low fiat on-ramp fees, and you can seamlessly swap on Mainnet, Polygon, Arbitrum, and Optimism. On the Uniswap mobile wallet, you can store and display your beautiful NFTs, and you can also explore Web3 with the in-app search features, market leaderboards, and price charts, or use Wallet Connect to connect to any Web3 application. So you can now go directly to DeFi with the Uniswap mobile wallet. Safe, simple custody from the most trusted team in DeFi. Download the Uniswap wallet today on iOS. There is a link in the show notes. Celo is the mobile-first, EVM-compatible, carbon-negative blockchain built for the real world, driving real-world use cases like mobile payments and mobile DeFi, and with Opera MiniPay as one of the fastest-growing Web3 wallets, Celo is seeing a meteoric rise with over 300 million transactions and 1.5 million monthly active addresses. And now, Celo is looking to come home to Ethereum as a layer 2. Optimism, Polygon, Matter Labs, and Arbitrum have all thrown their hats in the ring for the Celo layer 2 to build upon their stacks. Why the competition? The Celo Layer 2 will bring huge advantages like a decentralized sequencer, off-chain data availability secured by Ethereum validators, and one-block finality. What does that all mean for you? With Celo Layer 2, gas fees will stay low, and you can even pay for gas natively using ERC-20 tokens, sending crypto to phone numbers across wallets using Social Connect. But Celo is a community-governed protocol. This means that Celo needs you to weigh in and make your voice heard. Join the conversation in the Celo forums, follow Celo on Twitter, and visit Celo.org to shape the future of Ethereum.
March 13th is the next Ethereum hard fork, the Den Kun hard fork that introduces blobs to the Ethereum protocol. Blobs, the second fee market alongside Blockspace. We now also have Blobspace, and Blobspace is reserved for layer twos. Not totally reserved. There's probably going to be some inscriptions bullshit in there too.
Layer twos are going to be the big consumers of it. They use the most Blobspace of any.
There's going to be some other upgrades as well, but mainly it's the blobs that we were excited about. The last testnet just merged. That's just updated to include blobs, to include 4844 on Holsky. It was totally successful. So the main net date has been decided as March 13th. Do you see the little graphic that they put in when the EIP 4844 was accepted? The little blob, ASICI. It's a blob. I don't even know what it looks like.
It looks like your lattes, man. I can't even tell what this looks like. Yeah, so we got a blob in ASCII format here. So that's great. Thanks to the devs for getting that through. So ETH layer 2 transactions, price will go down. Optimism, Arbitrum, pretty much right away, like pretty close to the release.
And then they'll go up. To celebrate this and also just public goods in general, and also the Protocol Guild, there is a NounsDAO collaboration with the Protocol Guild. They're mostly just sponsoring this like animation with all of these cute characters about all the layer twos. Is it anime? I think that counts as anime. I'm not an anime expert.
It's a cartoon.
I
don't know.
Yeah. Cartoon featuring Polygon, Scroll, Sarknet, ZK Sync, as well as, of course, Arbitrum, Optimism. Everyone has little characters. There's going to be this cute little animation. And then the animation short is going to be released as an NFT at the Den Kun upgrade. And then all the proceeds for purchasing that NFT will go to the Protocol Guild.
If you collect little artifacts, right, with every time Ethereum hard forks, like people do this, right? There's like POAPs that happen every hard fork. There's things like this. And this would be a good thing to add to your collection.
Yeah, it's a collection about Ethereum history. And you'll be able to show your kids, and your kids are going to think that you're super cool.
Yeah, they sure will. Okay, speaking of super cool things, the Taproot Wizards, the Quantum Cats sold out. Nothing more exciting than NFTs and Bitcoin, David. What happened in the Bitcoin NFT world this week?
I'm sensing a little bit of sass in your voice, but man.
There's no sass.
3,333 OP cat NFTs were sold at 0.1
Wait, OP
Bitcoins.
Cats? I thought they were Quantum Cats.
Quantum Cats, the meme is coming out of the OP cat opcode. An opcode, so all opcodes on Bitcoin start with OP.
I'm such an Ethereum. I know OP is Optimism. Yeah, I don't know OP is opcode for Bitcoin.
You got to get your Bitcoiner on, man. it's a Bitcoin, it's like this OP cat thing. It's an ordinal. This is Udi Wertheimer and Eric Wall.
Yeah, Quantum Cats sold out immediately. Very hyped NFT drop on Bitcoin. Denominated in Bitcoin, obviously. I'm not used to denominating in Bitcoin. Like I said, sold at 0.1 Bitcoins. Current floor, 0.27 Bitcoins. Another sign, Ryan, that the bull market is on is when mints are like tripling in price right after drop.
Can I ask you a question? I don't know the full history here. I mean, if we had Anthony Sassano here, I'm sure he could tell us. That guy keeps receipts of everybody in the space. Udi, was he previously like a NFTs are dumb, I hate NFTs type of Bitcoiner, or am I just misremembering that?
Well, Udi is a amateur edgelord, and so he thinks everything is
dumb.
I
disagree. I think he's a pro edgelord. I think yeah, he's actually pretty good at it.
No, because by definition, if you're an edgelord, you cannot be professional at anything.
Okay, so that was a compliment. I get it. So you're saying that it's hard
to know? NFTs on Ethereum are dumb, but NFTs on Bitcoin are based.
I just want to know if that's actually what he used to say, because if so,
I'm 100% confident you can find an Udi tweet somewhere talking about how dumb NFTs are.
Oh, man. Well, you know what? If I cared more, I would go find that tweet and, you know, just resurface it. David, Synthetics is going to have its own chain because why not? Does every app need a chain? Does every DeFi protocol need a chain? Tell us about this.
Well, I think this is the Cosmos thesis. If you are a sufficiently successful DeFi protocol, and if Synthetics is not that, then who the hell is? Then you get to elevate yourself to the status of app chain. It's like the highest order of app you can be. First app, then app chain.
It's like a Pokemon evolution. You just kind of like, you just grow into your app chainness.
Oh my God, that's a great meme. Yeah. First app on a layer two, then you get to be big enough to go down to the layer one, and then you get to be big enough to justify your own chain.
Okay. So Synthetics is putting on its big boy pants and it's launching its chain.
Yeah. And Synthetics has been just like along the Optimism ride for a long time. Kane and the Optimism team has been super close. Synthetics was the second app to leverage Optimism after Uniswap. So first there was Unipigs, and then Synthetics had their own like custom Optimism deployment. And so rather than Synthetics deploying on many, many, many different chains, Synthetics is just going to have an OP stack snacks chain. God, is that the name of it? Snacks chain? SNX collateral, of course. And that will be the home of all Synthetics perps activity and will also be a part of the super chain.
So I remember that last time I heard from Kane on this, I read a blog post. I think you did an episode with Kane not too long ago. And one of the big problems to solve for Synthetics was fragmented liquidity across the ecosystem. Does this solve fragmented liquidity? Because I'm seeing this could mean a single place to borrow SUSD, a Synthetics USD, against SNX and allows for the potential to leverage all of this to be used as collateral across many chains. This essentially solves some of the liquidity problem that you know, has faced Synthetics.
I don't think it solves some of them. I think it solves all of them, because it makes a singleton instance of Synthetics aggregates all the liquidity all in one spot. Kane has always just been so far ahead of the curve. Everyone thinks that Compound and Robert Leshner invented yield farming, but Kane invented yield farming like 18 months earlier than that. And remember when our recent Justin Drake fixing fragmentation episode where eventually, like, instead of Uniswap deployment on 17 different Optimism chains, you would just have a uni chain, and that uni chain would actually just be like the uni smart contract on the Ethereum layer one, except it would be a chain that would be, and that would be contract called by other layer twos. And that would be the uni chain. And Kane of Synthetics and the Synthetics team are just getting ahead of the curve here. Even before some of the other issues around fragmentation are solved, they're saying, well, this is where the puck is going. We're going to build our snacks chain now, SNAX chain.
I still remember the days when Synthetics pivoted to EOS. Do you remember that slight detour for a while? That was in the very early days.
What?
You don't remember this?
They did?
Yeah, true story.
Holy!
I'll send you some links afterwards.
You got receipts for that, bro?
Oh, 100%. Yeah, they were all in on EOS for some period of months.
Before the Haven, it pivoted from Haven to synthetics. You're saying after it was synthetics.
I don't know if it was actually. It may have been in between that pivot. Okay, but Haven definitely.
I will give them a pass then.
You give them a pass?
Okay. Ken can have his ETH Maxi card back.
All right, Fractal launch. Frax Finance, they are up to some cool things. This is actually a really interesting ecosystem. Now they have launched, I believe, their own chain as well. The Frax chain, also a part of the Fraxtal. Optimism Superchain. Fraxtal? Okay.
Yeah.
What's going on here?
Kind of the same thing. Frax started off as just another decentralized stablecoin. Not to say just another, just a very successful decentralized stablecoin. And they were actually front running MakerDAO on what, like, everyone's super stoked on MakerDAO's endgame. And Frax has been just like doing that endgame for like a year now, building out, they forked Aave. I'm pretty sure they forked Aave. If they didn't, then they just built off Aave lookalike to have their own lending market for the Frax stablecoin to build out liquidity, their own AMM. Also on Frax. And so they just have this DeFi superstructure that was on the layer one, and now they are turning it into a chain. So this is like all the Cosmos people are watching this happen and be like, ha ha ha, we told you. And then all the Ethereum people are like, ha ha ha, but it's on Ethereum. and this is what Frax is doing. And so they have this very like sophisticated, vertically integrated DeFi financial suite of products all put together into a single chain. I thought this picture was actually pretty illustrative of what they were doing. I think if you want to scroll down. And so this is the Frax-centric view of the world. You have the big Frax chain, which is an OP stack chain. And so the OP stack chain is the little dot that connects it to Ethereum and all of Ethereum's rollups. But since Frax chain can have its own interoperability solutions, it also gives its optionality to connect to like Solana or Bitcoin or like Polkadot or all the other ones. And so if you are a what they call a Fraximalist, a Frax maximalist, this is your view of the world. This is how the network Frax topology the center, looks like, huh? To you. Yeah, Frax at the center. Yeah. Really, really cool. Part of the Optimism Superchain. And I want to bring this to a John Charbonneau meme, which I thought was hilarious, which is an app launches an app chain. And that app chain gets users, activity, wants more value capture and integration. Okay. Therefore, an app chain becomes a general purpose chain for other apps to deploy on. That's where Frax is going next. And then that app that deploys on Frax chain grows to in success and then wants to be on a general purpose app to optimize for more customizability, sovereignty, and value capture. And then we start at the very beginning, which is, okay, that new app just launches an app chain.
So
this is going to be the iterative cycle of apps launching on the app chains, becoming more general. And this is just how the industry is going to move forward here.
Fractals and chains all the way down. Apps, then chains, and more chains, then more apps, and more chains. David, are you a GoDaddy? Do you ever use GoDaddy for your domains? Do you have any domains?
I don't have any domains, and I've always thought GoDaddy is a weird name,
it's kind of cringe. It's kind of like,
it's
I think
like, what's the deal?
Yeah, like, why'd you name it that?
Yeah.
Anyway, they're big domain name service for massive. The internet. So, like, we have some of our domains there. I don't know if you know this, but bankless.com is actually registered on GoDaddy.
No. I'm glad you take care of this.
They have a partnership with ENS now. So they've launched a partnership where you can actually connect your GoDaddy domain name, so your .com to your .eth with ENS. And you can configure this in the back end. I haven't fully figured out how this works because I've been wanting to get bankless.eth to actually work in the browser and render bankless.com, like connect those two things together. Haven't been able to figure that out yet. I have some configuration required with Cloudflare, but the fact that we were getting there, we are linking our ENSs with our DNSs, I think that is a big step forward for the industry.
What does that unlock?
Well, we can basically use, you know, potentially you could send me money to rsa.com if I own that. Or actually I have ryansadams.com. So you could send me money that way and route to my ETH address, potentially. You're going to do that right now?
Yes.
Won't get to me. I mean, you could do stuff like that. We are connecting our worlds.
RyanSAdams.com is parked free. You are parked.
Yeah, it's parked. I don't use it yet. Okay. You thought, what did you expect? You think it was like some kind of website, like
a bio. It's like, yeah. It's like, hi, I'm Ryan.
Hey, I'm Ryan. Just some other side business.
Welcome to my website.
Man, you wish it was that. So that is the news. Here's what you could do with it. Look at this. Receive crypto with your GoDaddy domain name.
I think it's got to start from there. That's got to be like the base. Like, yeah, that's the simple one. You can type .com instead of .eth, but it's got to grow from there. Like, we're like kind of in the same vein of cross-chain contract calls, like .com referencing stuff on Ethereum using ENS names.
Yeah, 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 exactly. It's going to grow from there. It's going to be a bigger deal than it sounds like right now, David.
Did you see this amendment to the spot ETH ETF from ARK21, Ryan? Do you see what's going on here?
No, what's going on?
Okay, so Eric Balchunas goes, here we go again. ARK 21 shares, same entity, just filed an amendment S1 for their spot ETH ETF. And this is something that we saw, you know, in increasing frequency approaching the spot Bitcoin ETF approval. This one was a little bit different, though. So if you go to the next tweet, this was a highlighted part of the amendment, which talks about ETH staking inside of the ETH ETF. I'm going to read a quote here.
This is some fine print right here.
Super fine print. Yeah. The sponsor may, from time to time, stake a portion of the trust assets through one or more trusted third-party staking providers. The trust would receive certain staking rewards of Ether tokens, which may be treated as income to the trust. Staking activity comes with risk of loss of Ether tokens, including in the form of slashing penalties. Additionally, bonding and unbonding processes of Ethereum may render the tokens inaccessible for a period of time, resulting in certain liquidity risks that the sponsor will manage.
What's all that mean?
We're getting a staked ETH ETF. Not now. Not this year. Probably not. It's not going to come. It's going to be vanilla
They're
out of the gate.
They're applying for it. They're filing for it.
We're shooting our shot for the staked ETH ETF. First, we're going to get the vanilla one, but people are lining up for the staked one, including ARK 21 shares, which is...
Do you think we'll get the staked one?
Well, we will get the staked one in the fullness of time. It's more of a question of like, are
before
we going to get
Gary
it?
Or after Gary?
Are like, we going to get it in 2025 or not?
Yeah, yeah. It's will Gary allow it or not? It's kind of a question. Okay, got it. Well, that's good news to see that continue to evolve. David, there is a wormhole airdrop incoming. That's a massive bridge protocol. One of the most used bridges. The ticker will be W. Got
Which
some
is pretty Chad. That's a pretty Chad ticker.
No, that's a great ticker. Just one initial.
W.
Back to Ethereum ETF type stuff. Did you see this? This is in the news. The SEC may be forced to declare... This is Fortune Crypto. The SEC may be forced to declare Ethereum security after a controversial new launch. I saw tons of headlines like this week. So... Do you remember that company Prometheum, which is like...
Yeah, with like the lizard man CEO.
A licensed security exchange, okay? And I can't remember this guy's name, Kaplan. He was in front of Congress. Last time I saw him, he was in front of Congress, basically simping the Gary Gensler SEC message that, of course, Ether is a security. And by the way, Prometheum, the exchange that I founded, is going to be a registered, licensed securities exchange. And so his message was, don't tell me those crypto renegades, you lawbreakers, that you can't come in and just register with the SEC, because of course you can. I have. And he went on the podcast tour talking about Ether as a security. Anyway, the first asset that Prometheum has chosen to list is Ether. Okay, so they're a securities exchange with the Ether as their first tokenized security. So what do you think that means, David?
They're going to go out of business.
I don't even know if that was the point. I don't know what this guy's doing. Honestly, there's some speculation. Look, I'm not a conspiracy guy, but it's just very congruent with the SEC's message and like government plant. I don't know. I don't know.
It's exactly what Gary Gensler wants to hear.
It's just weird. Anyway,
can you pull up a picture of this man? Can you, Kaplan?
We shouldn't like just his looks.
Do it. Can you do it? Can you do it? Can you do it? Can you do it? Please do it. Ryan, have you seen American Psycho?
Oh no! Are you saying Patrick Bateman vibes here?
Yeah, big time, big time. That is a lizard man. That is a lizard human.
Oh my god. Well, let's leave it at that then. Okay, here's the good news, though. The good news is apparently it doesn't work like this. So
I'm just shocked.
Mike Selig, crypto lawyer, says the SEC has effectively conceded ETH isn't a security multiple times. I guess they would debate that, but I think they have to. But left ambiguity. Prometheum need only reasonably believe ETH is a crypto asset security to custody it. SEC permitting Prometheum to custody ETH as a security because of this ambiguity won't make ETH a security. All right. So Shocker. Just because Prometheum and Kaplan custody it as a security doesn't automatically make ETH a security. That's not how this whole thing works. So I think the Fortune headline is wrong there, David, and we can move on.
Yeah, we should move on. This is my response to Mr. Aaron Kaplan. This is, I think, how the industry will respond to him. This is a dog petting a cat. Dog's way bigger. Cat's
there.
Tiny.
They're there.
It's like, yeah, that's cute. You're cute. You're cute, bro. There's a raise this week that Bankless Ventures was an investor in. This is Omega Bitcoin DeFi Infrastructure raised $6 million with participation from Bankless Ventures, that's us, Borderless Capital, Fraction, Lightspeed, Blockchain, and a few other angels as well. Yano from Blockworks, G-Money, OSF, and a bunch of other participation as well. What is it? What is it? It is Bitcoin smart contracts, like a multi-sig on Bitcoin. Basically, very simple. You can either move Bitcoin out of these accounts or you cannot. Connected to a Chainlink or other Oracle-type service that connects to trading strategies on Ethereum or any other smart contract platform. So it's kind of like Yearn-like accounts on Ethereum connected to an Oracle that goes to Bitcoin. And then the last piece of the puzzle is that institutional capital will give Bitcoin holders on the Bitcoin blockchain a loan with their Bitcoin as collateral. So they don't have to move it off of Bitcoin. They don't have to move it at all. And then you can get some yield in crypto. You can get some trading activity, some trading capital in the Ethereum degen side of things without having to touch your Bitcoin on the Bitcoin side of things. There's also custodial solutions as well for people who like their Bitcoin in custody. Overall, adding productivity to BTC, the asset. So congrats, Omega, on the raise. And there's a link in the show notes if you want to learn more.
Let's get to the meme of the week, David. What are we looking at?
This is a Farcaster meme. This is actually a Twitter account that I've been following lately, Bold Leonidas. He just makes comments. And so it's a little frog guy who's looking at his phone, talking to Dan Romero's like profile picture, and he's looking at Farcaster, as implied. So it's Twitter but with crypto, and Dan Romero goes, "Yeah, I guess." And so the little frog guy goes, "So it's literally crypto Twitter."
Do you feel
Do like... these ever land? Do these ever land? You said you don't want to know, do you? All right, and we also got a second meme of the week. It's also a Farcaster meme, this time on Farcaster. And this is what everyone's getting excited about. The top of the iceberg, this is the meme. Farcaster, it's the first non-speculative crypto app. That's the tip of the iceberg that you see. But then once you get on Farcaster, you see the DGEN token, the OG NFT, which is worth like $5,000. Auxin Far Market, Pearl Bets, Bounty Caster, Points, Daylight Notifications, Warps will be billions, Mint Frames, Token Sign 5. So yeah, there's actually a bunch of degenerate activity. Apparently people have collected like tens of thousands of dollars just by being on Farcaster.
Yeah. As always, guys, we have disclosures always posted on bankless.com/disclosures, so you can check those out. And I'll end with this, some risks. Crypto is risky. You could lose what you put in, but we are headed west. This is the frontier. It's not for everyone, but we're glad you're with us on the Bankless journey. Thanks a lot.